One of the biggest stresses in life is money, or better put, the lack of money. You may have heard the saying, the root of all evil is money. Well, really the root of all evil is lack of money. And you may say money's not important. However, in the Western world, money is really the ticket to lots of freedoms that you'd like to enjoy through your life. Most dreams have a price tag, whether it be international travel, visiting different countries around the world. You've got to pay for the tickets if you want to stay in hotels. You've got to pay for the hotel. If you want to send your kids to private school, then you have to pay for that. If you want to buy their uniforms or give them buy them a bike for Christmas, actually the ticket is money. If you want to support a charity, then hey, that's money. If you want to buy a home, it's money. So yes, money is not necessarily everything in the world, but it's like oxygen. You know, without it, it's hard to live. The great Zig Ziglar said, money is one of the most important things in the world. Second to oxygen in the Western world. And it's important to have as much money as you need to live the life that you want to live. And everybody's different. Everyone wants to live a different life, so therefore the price tags for that life, the price tags for those goals and those dreams are going to vary from individual to individual. And today's session is about creating enough money for yourself to live the life that you want to live, serving the purpose that you want to serve, while living within alignment of your values. That way, not only will you become wealthy, but you also will be happy. Happy, wealthy, and healthy, obviously. So I get lots of graduates who become very successful personal trainers or exercise professionals, and they own their own businesses, they own their gyms, and they're making good money, whether it be $100,000 a year plus for an exercise professional, or it might be in the multiple millions if they own a gym. And they come to me and they say, okay, now I'm earning this bit of a surplus of money, I'm actually earning good money, what do I do with it so I can set myself up in the future? Now, it's important in your career to do what you love, and you may have to do it because you have to do it because you have to earn money. But ultimately, you want to put yourself in a position where you don't do it because you have to do it because you have to earn money, but you do it because you want to do it because you love what you do, and money is not necessarily the deciding factor of whether you're going to train people or run a business, whatever it might be. And that's seeking to put yourself into that position of what people call financial independence. And that's where you're in a position where you do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, for as long as you want. And that is called economic freedom. And what that basically means is that you have enough money invested or saved that's going to serve your life without you having to work in your life to earn the money. So let money work for you rather than you work for money. So initially you have to work for money, to get money, to invest money, so money will work for you, and eventually it will build and build and build and build to a level where that money working for you earns so much what we call passive income, which means gives you income without actually working from the return of your investments that actually service your life, where you don't actually have to create active income. Active income means you actually have to physically work for it, whether it be through technology or running gyms or labor or whatever it might be, or consulting. So in this journey, in your career, it's always nice to, if you're going to earn the money, you might as well invest it and make yourself financially independent. Financially independent means you don't have to work. You could play golf or go fishing, and your investments will give you a return, an income that allows you to live the life you want to live, live where you want to live, and do what you want to do. So that's financial independence. But leading up to that, you certainly have to work for money to put yourself in that position. And if you're going to work, you might as well do what you love, become great at it. That increases your value to the marketplace. That gives you a greater return for your consultation or your experience or your knowledge or your skills or your labor, whatever that might be. So today's session is not going to go down the path of should you open up a business or should you work for someone. Either one, you have to decide how you want to live your life. And some people want that freedom to work for themselves, to create their own business. And some people like to have a little bit more safety and security within a business, whether it be financial safety or they just like to be a part of a team, whatever it might be. But if you want to increase your income or profits from business or your wage from working for someone, then you have to increase your value. The old saying, if you want to earn more, you have to learn more. If you want to grow more, you have to become more. So choose a path that's going to make you happy earning your money, and then while you do that, then you can start to invest that money into places that will eventually put you in a position where you can stop doing what you're doing, whether it be running a business or whether it be working for someone, if you choose to. Because you could quit or sell the business and what people call retire, which I personally am not a big believer in, because why would you retire from doing what you love? The only time you retire if you don't really enjoy what you're doing. And life is a long time to work doing what you don't love doing, so you can retire. Most of your life is doing what you don't want to do, so put you in a position where you can do what you want to do. Why don't you just do what you want to do, earn money from it, and then decide when you become financially free whether you want to continue doing that or you want to go and do something more exciting or something more important to you. Not because you're trapped in what we call the money trap. It means you're a slave to the job, a slave to the business, because you're a slave to your expenses and your bills and your mortgage and your repayments. Therefore, you have this economic constraint on your life. And a lot of people will make decisions based on money. When they want to do something, many times the first thing they think is, how much does it cost? how much do I have to pay? What's the bill? What's the invoice? Wouldn't it be great to be in a position where that is the last thought? And then at the end of you making the decision, then you say, oh, by the way, how much does it cost? Because you've got to do it anyway, you've got to buy it anyway, or whatever it might be, or you're going to invest in it anyway. So this is about putting yourself in a good financial position where you can make good decisions based on your values, not on your bank account or lack of bank account. And, you know, I was always taught this great saying is the best way to help the poor is not become poor. So in your journey, if you've got some skills and knowledge and you've got some drive and ambition, then you might as well use those skills to put yourself in a very strong economic position or financial position where you can make really good choices and good decisions based on maybe your purpose or your values or the charity or your servings, rather than your limited cash flow or limited wage or limited bank account. So let me go through, these are just fundamentals, and obviously, you know, it's important when you make these decisions that you consult with your accountant. If you're setting up different legal structures, you obviously work closely with your lawyers, and if you have a financial coach or financial planner or something like that, it's going to help you to put your money in places that's going to give you long-term returns, put yourself into position. What's important is not to compare yourself to other people. That's a very a dangerous place to be, because then you think the grass is always greener on the other side or someone else is doing. Now, one thing I've learned is most people, when you look at people, they're not doing as well as you think they are, and they're doing as bad as you think they are. So many times you don't really get a full picture. I've met people who on the outside look very rich, but when you get to know them, they're not in that position. Or then I meet other people who don't look rich at all, but actually they're quite rich. So don't do this thing of, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, you know what the neighbors are doing. They got a new car, I'll get a new car. Well, they got that, I have to do it. They got a Louis Vuitton bag, I have to buy a Louis Vuitton bag. What's important for you is to to design your life around how you want to live your life. And what's important to you, because you're the one who have to live in your life 24/7 in the ocean of your own thoughts. So a good way to look at it is, what type of life do you want to live? Look at what type of car I want to drive and where do I want to live, what type of house, what type of purpose do I want to serve, what charities do I want to support, how do I want my kids to live, what do I need to want to give to my kids to set them up, where do I want to send them to school, where do I want to travel, what types of holidays do I want to have, what type of things, whether it be watches or cars or speedboats or what are things, all those little materialistic things that make up your life, that brings a bit of added joy to your life. Now, the ultimate joy is living a life according to you, serving your values, seeking your purpose, and in alignment with your virtues, and, you know, following your moral compass. So yes, happiness is within, but you want that happiness to also be supported with some economic freedom, geographical freedom, occupational freedom, where you can do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, for as long as you want, and you're not restricted by that lack of cash flow or money. So the first thing to start is get a picture of how you want to live your life, not now, and as you're progressing to that ultimate place where you want to be when you're in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, 20 years' time in retirement. And then you can start to say, okay, this is a lot of people in life, they get a job, they get a wage, and they design a wage around that. They design a life around that wage. You know, that's how they do it. They get a job. then they wait for the pay rise, and they get the pay rise, and they expand their life a bit. You know, they buy a nicer car, or they might do a bit more of an exotic holiday, depending on their wage. Where, how about reverse engineering it? Is look at where you want to be, what type of life you want to live, what would be the dream life, where do you want to, what freedoms do you want, what things do you want, what people do you want, and then look at that picture, and then now say, now what do I have to do to set myself in that, into that position? Do I have to, what type of job, or what type of career, what type of business, what type of skills, what type of knowledge do I need to acquire to be able to put myself into that position? And that's going backwards, what type of life I want to live, and then come back to now says, what are the steps I have to build to get there? For those, you know, those people who fail to plan the fail. So you have to have a basic plan. And that plan will always go left and right and up and down, but the plan will give you that compass that you can come back to when things push off that course. And then you can make some good decisions, and then most importantly, you can start. Then you can decide what you have to learn to become that person that deserves that life and deserves those things and deserves that freedom. Because anyone who puts himself into a financially free position or a wealthy position or a financially rich position, then that doesn't happen unless they inherited it. But most people, they worked hard to get there, and they worked hard doing it their way. You've designed your way. Don't copy other people. Create your own path, because if you copy other people, you won't be as successful with them, because you're always going to be a version of them, not the potential that you can possibly be. So let's look at some basic things. Imagine you're starting, you're in a job, you have a career, you have a business, and it's giving you money. Now, what do you do with that money? So I'm just going through some really simple stuff to start with. And as you grow, you may want to go down to other avenues of investments that are beyond what I'm talking about today. But this is the fundamentals. You know, it's like a foundation. Get a strong foundation, financial foundation underneath you financially. And once you've got that strong foundation there, then you can start to do some exciting other things, some risky things. But don't risk everything on thin ice. Get some thick ice underneath you. Because if you're doing risky things on thin ice, you're thinking, geez, we hope this works. You put all your eggs in one basket, and then you're fearful of losing the basket. And you tend to lose what you fear, because you become insecure yourself with what you got because you fear of losing it. And that doesn't end very well. So build some thick ice underneath you as a foundation. And once you've got that, once you've secured that, then you can go and venture off and do some other exciting things that that you see in the marketplace today. So I guess looking at the major areas of investment. Now, I see there's about four. First of all, there's cash. You know, cash is king. So always make sure that over time you save a good bit of cash and have that tucked away. That's the emergency fund. That's what I call your pillow that makes you sleep well at night. You sleep well at night because you've got this cash deposit or cash investment that you can access any particular time to serve you if something happens, you know, an emergency, a medical emergency, an accident, or get yourself out of the whole type of emergency, because many times money is a ticket out of trouble. You might get into some form of problems, and you still have to pay your lawyer or your accountant or your solicitor or what it might be to help you get out of it, because you may not have the expertise to get yourself out, even though you had the ignorance to get yourself in. You know, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. If you're in a hole, you dug yourself there, drop the spade and get some climbing equipment and get out. But cash is the first one. But cash in itself doesn't give a great return. If anything, cash depreciates with time, with the increase of inflation. Now, over time, over long periods of time, inflation is around about 5%. So the value of the dollar decreases over time about 5%. I remember when I was a young kid, growing up in New Guinea, I used to go and buy a can of Coke for 5 cents. Well, now it's probably in the many, many, many dollars. So the price of petrol 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, I always remember when the price of petrol hit 50 cents, I thought, oh my gosh, what's the world coming to? Because cost of living increased. So that's called inflation, the increase in CPI, Consumer Price Index. So if you have all your money in cash and nothing else, and you haven't got invested, if it's under the pillow or under the bed or dug in a hole in the backyard, then you're actually losing 5% of that money every year on average. I know it goes up and down, but on average 5%. So yes, have some there, and if you're going to have it, put it into an account that gives you an interest return, you know, where the banks will have sort of high interest accounts. And that's what you have to explore with the bank, and what's the best place to put it. where it's safe and secure, and you're going to have an interest return on it that's going to at least minimize that devaluing of the dollar over time. But don't put all your eggs in that basket, because then all your eggs are going to depreciate. Then you have other places that you can put your money. Now, the obvious one that a lot of people think about is into property or real estate. And that's a very good, solid investment, because property over time always goes up. Now, obviously, there's some places it goes down, most places go up. But if you're going to invest in property, and I'll talk a bit more about this and how to put it all together, then make sure you get familiar with property and study real estate and invest buy a house that's going to appreciate, and it's in a good area with good transport, local facilities such as supermarkets and good road and motorways and schooling systems. And if you invest in places that's going to grow, then that's going to be a fairly good place to put your money, where people want to be over time. And you may look into the future, you may not be necessary. I imagine people are going to start to go here. And you can probably get a clue with what roadworks or motorways or highways are being built to that area. If they're building big shopping centres, if there's big shopping centres, then those people have done their research. They're not going to build, you know, hundreds of million dollar shopping centre if there's not going to be anyone there. So you can actually see what's happening in the future by looking at other industries or what's happening in that area. So real estate, obviously your own home is a good investment, because ultimately it's always good to have somewhere to live. And then you can venture out and start to buy investment properties, you know, where you live in your home and you buy another investment, someone rents it, you get a return on the rent, and plus you also get a capital growth in the property. It means the value of the property goes up over time. So when you invest, you have two ways to grow your wealth. Number one, the increase in capital of the asset. The asset means that's the home, and that is an appreciating asset where the value goes up. And if that asset gives you a rent, a return, what we call a yield, then that's extra bonus on top. So ideally in property, you may be seeking 5% return on the property. So if you're paying, I'll do nice round numbers. If a property is $100,000, 5% return means you're getting $5,000 rent from that $100,000. Plus the value of that $100,000 in over time may go up in value. You know, next year it might be worth $107,000, then it might be worth $120,000. If it booms, it might go to $130,000. You know, where I live right now, a lady bought a property just across the road. She paid about $650,000 and she sold it just the other day. She bought it about 12 months ago and she sold it just the other day for $1.3 million. Now, that's not normal. And don't get greed get hold of you. Ultimately, property will grow anywhere between, on average, around 7% over time. But there will be places where it booms for whatever reason. But for every boom, there's going to be a doom. The marketplace always does that. So be very careful that you don't make long-term decisions on short-term emotions such as greed and money hunger, you know. So you want to have a long-term investment plan. So property is always going to go up, always has, and I've made lots of money myself through the increasing in the capital wealth, capital value of property. So you can buy your own home, you can buy investment. And obviously with that, there's going to be different tax effective ways to do it and tax benefits. And that's going to be something which is going to, you have to work out locally wherever you live with what government you're under and what time and what's going to be the best way to maximize your tax. Because I was always told the two main things that bleed your money is ignorance and tax. Because when you make money, you have to pay tax on it. But to have a tax problem is a good challenge, but it means you're earning a lot of money. So property is the second category. First is cash. Make sure that's looked after. Property is the second part. I'm going to put it all into a nice little system of investment that's going to layer it for you to put yourself in a really great position without taking big risks. The next category is the share market. Now, the share market is investing in other companies, what we call public companies. And I'm not going to go into the detail of any of this. We covered this quite in detail in our Max program. But the share market is you're investing in other public companies. Now, public companies are, for anyone can invest in them, they seek capital from the marketplace to grow the business, to grow, yeah, and that could be your supermarkets, it could be your food supply companies, it could be your banks, could be your utilities, could be your technological companies. So they're all public companies and anyone can invest into them. You just need money to invest in them. And again, when you invest in those companies, there's two ways to earn money. Number one, they'll give you a yield return. They'll give you a dividend. They'll basically will give you a return. And depending on the company, some companies don't give as much dividends. It means they want to keep the money in the company to grow the company, to increase its capital worth. Other companies, which are more more stable, being a long time, what we call blue chip companies, means they're long established, big financial consistency, they're robust, they've been through many cycles of the world and all sorts of stuff, such as the banks. They'll give you quite a good return, and a yield means a dividend back to you, to the shareholders of the company. The other way to get increased wealth from the share market is the capital growth. The share will increase over time. I know when I was very young, I bought Commonwealth Bank shares and they were only about $1 a share. Now they're around a $90 a share. It means they've increased 90 times since I bought them. Plus, I've gotten that yield return, that dividend return, every year across that time, of which I've actually invested back into it. I remember my father did the same thing. He bought about $2,000 worth of CBA shares. He bought lots of other shares as well. But by the time he passed away, those Commonwealth Bank shares were worth many hundreds of thousands of dollars. So he turned $2,000 into hundreds of thousands of dollars because as an investor, it keeps growing and growing and growing and doubling like a snowball effect. Like the great book written by Warren Buffett, one of the richest people in the world, wrote a good book called The Snowball Effect. It means your returns and reinvestment on your investment will keep growing your investment over time. Again, I'm not going to go too far into it. But ultimately, all your investments will double in value. You know, your house will double in value. The lady across the road, it doubled in value in 1 year. Now, that's not normal. That's not normal. But generally speaking, property will double probably every 7 years, 10 years or so, depending on the return. And shares, your return on shares can be, on average, across many, many, many decades, has been around double-digit numbers, 10, 11, 12%, even 13% for certain sectors. And the sector is the banking sector, the utility sector, the energy sector, the food sector. They're different sectors. So if you're going to invest in shares, make sure you know what the share is, what the company is. Don't invest in things you have no idea what you invested in. You know, don't use greed that overrides ignorance. Make sure you become informed and do some study. Now, that's direct shares. The other way to indirectly invest in shares is through what we call managed funds. And managed funds are basically a company that you give money to. They take that money from lots of different people and then they go and invest in shares on your behalf. Meaning you don't have to do all the legwork, you don't have to do all the study, you don't have to do all the research. They do all that for you and they spread your investment over through different sectors and different shares and different companies. Therefore, it minimizes the risk. They, over time, get a return. They take a little fee for their service and they give the return back to you. And that's probably a nice, more passive way to invest in the share market because you don't have to do the research and you don't have to study that bank or this business or that technological company or that. I'm not being too specific with names here because names will change over time. Companies were around 30 years ago is no longer here and there's companies here now that weren't around 5 years ago. But they're the general sectors. And make sure you invest in the managed funds that you understand. You know, don't invest in things, again, that you're ignorant of, have no idea. You know, it says, yeah, I know that company. Yes, that's a strong company. That's a big bank. Yeah, that's a big insurance company. Yeah, I know that. And then, therefore, you're going to feel better that, hey, you're not going to be putting a bet on that racehorse that you never heard of. But your barber said, hey, I'll give you a tip. That's not investing, that's called gambling. So when it comes to shares / managed funds, that's another area to invest in. And obviously that's a bit more passive. Passive means you put the money in, then you just let them do the work and you get the dividends sent to you and then you can look at your share price over time. My suggestion, if you're going to invest in shares, you invest there for at least 7-10 years. You know, don't look at your share price every day, it will drive you nuts because it goes up and down. It goes up and down through fear, through greed and fear, greed and fear. Because the price of shares short-term can go up and down with short movements in the marketplace based on what's happening in the world and fear or greed. But long-term, they'll either go up or down based on the profitability and the robustness of the company itself. So always look at the big picture of something so you can see really what's happening, not the short-terms up and down, because that will drive you nuts. Now, obviously, if you're investing in property, going back to the second sector, in an investment property, that's a bit more active, a little bit active, because you still have to make sure you collect the rent and you make sure that they're looking after the house, and you have to do repairs and you have to pay the rates and all the little bills associated with that. So that's a bit more of a hassle, but obviously a good hassle, because it's a hassle associated with something which is growing, and it's an investment that's going to give you a bigger egg. The egg will grow over time. And these are all what we call appreciating assets. Appreciating asset is something that grows over time, where a depreciating asset shrinks or decreases over time. Like your car, your value of the car will be a depreciating asset. Your speedboat will be a depreciating asset. Your computers, your TV, all those little lifestyle toys that you have in your life. I'm not saying you don't have them. That's what makes up life. The joy and the fun of racing on your jet ski or driving on your car, or they're all depreciating assets. So as long as you understand that, but make sure you don't have nothing. You make sure you don't just have depreciating assets around you, but no appreciating assets, because your car will eventually be worth nothing. Your TV will be worth nothing. Everything you have will eventually be worth nothing, unless it's a vintage something which may increase in value over the time. But you know, that's an extreme example, isn't it? An argument from an extreme is a very poor example. But there's going to be those extreme situations. But ultimately, you want to have a balance between appreciating assets are going to set your lifestyle up and grow it, and depreciating assets is going to help you enjoy the journey while you grow your appreciating assets. The fourth category of investment is owning your own business. Setting up your own business, and that's probably the fastest way to get wealthy, but it's also the most complex way, and you know, out of the categories, probably the riskiest way, because you know it's all in your hands and you're really great. But this, if you know, I've always been in business for 32 years, and that's something which I love. I love what I do. I become great at what I do. I learn. I develop my skills, and I've been fully informed. And by the time I do it, I know what I'm doing. But owning your own business is a great way, because now profits give you a greater return than wages. If you're working for someone, you might get up to maybe $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, maybe $100,000. Some people go into the hundreds of $100,000. If you're really a top-end corporate lawyer or something like that, you might be up to a couple hundred thousand. Some people get up to, you know, if you're the CEO of a major multi-billion dollar company, then you might be in the millions, all right? But that's really a small percent of people. But most on the wages scale is going to be in the around the 100,000 below or just above, and you would have extreme people such as the CEO or of a big company might be get paid more. But when you own the business, profits will always be better than wages, and you can own a business that can profit $100,000 a year, $500,000, or millions of dollars a year. So in that owning the business, you pay yourself a wage, and then if that business actually makes a profit, which ideally that's the whole purpose, then that profit is yours. And that's going to give you a lot more. But to do that, there's five. Now you're responsible for everything in the business, not just your specific area of skill or expertise. You're there responsible for the marketing and the advertising, the product development, the research and development, and the tax, and the staff, and the staff training, and the expansion, the corporate structure, and all of that. You're responsible for everything. However, with greater responsibility comes greater reward. You don't get greater rewards without greater responsibility. So that's the fourth category of business. Now, make sure if you do that, you're passionate about what you want to do, you really want to run your own business. Or you may stick to maybe just working for someone else in the business. So they're in my mind, the four main categories of investment for your money, to grow your money. Cash, very little growth, if any growth, sometimes depreciates, but it's always good to have that there for that rainy day, that special day, that emergency day. property, which is your own home, which I think is really important. Just buying your own home is forced saving. You know, you could probably make more money if you took that money and invested in maybe shares or something like that. But ultimately, this creates that strong concrete foundation for you, a place that you live, a home, because that investment isn't always decided on return. There's many other returns to consider, just emotional return, family, connection, love, all of that great stuff there. And then also in real estate is investment properties, where you want to go and buy investment properties. And I know people who are on a basic wage, but they're up to 7 investment properties because they positively geared that investment property, which basically means is they get a loan from the bank to buy the property, but they got the property at a rate, and the rent from the person who rents the home covers the repayments, the mortgage repayment for the bank. So if it covers it or leaves you a bit surplus, a bit left over, that's called positively gearing. If there is a decrease, so the bank, if the bank repayments are say $500 a week and the rent is $400 a week, then you're short $100. So you have to take that out of your wages or your pocket to top it up. That's called negatively gearing. And generally speaking, that is tax deductible depending on what jurisdiction that you're in. If the mortgage payment is $500 and the rent is $600, then you've got a $100 surplus. It means you're making $100 a week using other people's money, which is OPM. Other people's money, which is the bank, the mortgage. Now you get a profit made across the year of, say, $5,000, which means you now have to pay tax on. Yes, the tax you have to pay. But you can try to minimize that with the expenses of maintaining the investment. Use other people's money. If you're in shares, you're using other people's minds. It means you're not using your mind to run the bank. You're investing shares in the bank, and the CEO and all the bank managers, they're using their minds to run the bank to make the profit to give you a dividend on your shares, plus increasing the value of the bank, which is a capital growth. So you're using OPM again, other people's money for the bank, or other people's mind to run the bank to give you the share. And I was always taught you make more money owning the bank than putting your money in the bank. Because you put your money in the bank, the best you're going to get is maybe a 5% return on a long-term deposit, round about. But if you actually invest in the bank in shares, then you're likely to get up to 12, 13%, 10% double-digit returns on your money. So if you're going to have excess money, don't put it in the bank. Just buy shares in the bank, because you tend to make more money that way. So they're the 4 categories of investment. Now there are some other things floating out there, like cryptocurrency and, you know, betting on horses and betting on the value of currencies around the world and dollars and all sorts of stuff. And yeah, that's fine, but now we're getting into a very specialized area. And my suggestion, if you're like the average person like myself, I want a nice, simple, progressive, lovely life without too many things floating around my head, then let's get the foundations all in place, and then you can worry about those things once you got that foundation. Because if they go pear shape, or they go to custard, as they say, or they don't work very well and you lose it, then at least you got this foundation to secure your future. So that's all what we call icing or cherries on top, or these other things, but get the foundation right. So I like to suggest that you have plan A, plan B, and plan C. And don't go to plan B until you've established plan A. And don't go to plan C until you establish plan A and B. Nice and simple. What is plan A? Now, plan A is basically putting everything in place that in the worst case scenario, you're going to end up financially independent, living a good life. It may not be the lifestyles of the rich and famous, but it's a good life, serving your values, doing the things you want to do. So where do you put your money for that? Well, first of all, I just go to some obvious examples. One example would be buy your home, buy a house for your home and pay it off, and then secure it and get it paid off. So over time, buy your home, set up the mortgage repayments, and pay your house off. Because at least, no matter what happens in the world, you got somewhere to live. And really appreciate that, because there's so many people in the world who are homeless, so many people who can't afford homes. So save your pennies up, work extra hours, do 2 jobs, do whatever it takes. But eventually, you want to eventually own your own home. So buy a home, you pay it off over time, whether it be 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, and in the worst case scenario, in 20, 30 years down the track, you own your home. And then, hey, you're secure. At least you got that. You got somewhere to sleep, somewhere to raise your family. So that's number one. But don't just do that. You do multiple things at the same time to grow your wealth over time. So save your pennies, get a deposit, get a home. That may not be your first thing. You may want to go straight to managed funds, and that's okay too. You know, I was investing in managed funds before of buying a home. But there's, yeah, you have to do it the way that you feel good about your decisions and secure about your decisions and excited about your decisions without going to see, well, geez, I hope it doesn't go bad. Next is take advantage of some of the government incentives wherever you live. And in Australia, they have superannuation. In New Zealand, they have KiwiSaver. So these are some what we call good tax-effective ways to put money. It means the government will give you tax benefits. They'll maybe give you, you know, some extra benefits to invest money, because what they don't want is an aging population who are living off the pension, because they're not going to have the money to support people off the pension or benefits or whatever it might be. So they want you to encourage you to take responsibility for your financial future, to invest into superannuation or KiwiSaver, whatever it might be in your country. And those tax rules and those government legislations will change over time and how you set that up. So make sure that you tick that box. First one, home, right? Because we all like to live somewhere. If you don't like to live somewhere and you like to be a gypsy and travel around the world, then don't worry about it. That's okay. It's your decision. You have to live your life the way you want to live it. But these are just some suggestions. B, superannuation, schemes from the government, KiwiSaver. And look at, have a good chat to your accountant, because they should be up to date with all the benefits and how much you can put in and how much you should put in, and make sure that's ticked off. So if you got your home, you got a good superannuation, so worst case scenario, at the end of your, when you get to that day of retirement or choosing not to do it anymore, what you don't want to do, or choosing not to run your business, then at least you got your home and you got a great super that you can do what you want to do, you know, whether it be play golf, go and join a knitting class, or, you know, go hiking or bike riding, whatever it might be, with maybe a little bit of extra money to do a bit of travel if you want to do that. But set that up, and set it up so that, yeah, it's going to lead to an amount of money that's going to be support the life that you want to live. And here's a nice little exercise to do, and working at how much do I need to save or have invested to live the life I want to live. So the first question here is, ask yourself this: how much money, how much wage, how much income or cash flow do you want in your retirement to live a life? So say you own your home and you need some money coming in from your investments, right? Ideally, passive investments means you don't have to work for the money. So how much is that that's going to give you a good life? Is it $50,000 a year? Is it $100,000 a year? Is it $200,000 a year? Is it $1 million a year? And that's up to you, depending on how you want to live your life. So let's do a nice round figure. Just say you'd like to be in a position where you own your home in the place you want to live, you know, live happily ever after, and you have a wage coming from your investment, a revenue, a cash flow coming investment, so you can do a bit of travel, go out to the restaurant, upgrade your bike and your car every 5 years, whatever it might be. And just say it's $100,000. That's just a nice round figure. So basically with that, how much money do you need to have invested? Well, a nice little round figure would be multiply that, whatever it is, 50, 100 or 200,000 or a million, multiply it by 20. So if the number is $100,000, multiply it by 20, now you've got 2 million. So you basically would need $2 million saved up or invested to support that lifestyle. Why is it 2 million? Because if you got 2 million, and even if you put it into a place that gives you a return of say 5%, which you can get most times, maybe in a bank or whatever, because a bank at the high end will give maybe 5% returning, depending on what interest rates are going on at the time, and that will vary, I understand that. Then 5%, give or take, of 2 million is $100,000. So if you have that invested, whether that comes back through a dividend, through investing into blue chip shares, or whether it be a long-term deposit or bank bonds or whatever it might be. I know my father, when he retired, he had a lot of blue chip shares. And he'll just give a dividend. He'll get a dividend going to his bank account every month or so that created a great life for him, where he could play golf. He's golf 5 days a week, out to dinner every now and again, had his house, did his gardening, have maybe an overseas trip once every 2 years and a local trip once a year, and that created a great little life for him. But he had a good amount of money coming in combined with other things, streams that he had in place. So that gives you a good idea of how much money you need to invest to grow over time. So plan A consists of owning your own home, taking advantage of your super and your KiwiSaver, whatever it is in your country, and then you may want to invest into maybe some managed funds. Now, I put managed funds in A because they're very passive, and you invest in a managed fund with expert fund managers who do this for a living 24/7. So they're up 24/7, you're sleeping in bed, and they're working trying to make you more money because they want to make it profitable, because the more profit they make, the more of the percent they make from your money. And you get, it's a win-win situation. So they may take a small fee, a percentage, but a small percentage of a bigger amount is a bigger amount for them, but it's also a real big amount for you. So they have motives and incentives to grow your money and get a great return and invest it in good places. So you may go to a managed fund, and some of the vitals might be Colonial First Aid or AMP or Bankers Trust. There's heaps of different ones in your country, and there's lots of different managed funds. Funds could invest into blue chip shares, Australian shares, New Zealand shares, international shares, resources, which is mining and stuff like that, industrial, which is more the commercial things you see, you know, shopping centers and banks, that's industrial investments. So they invest in different sectors. So my suggestion for your first or second managed fund, invest in things that you understand, that you know what they are. You look at the list, and they might list the top 10 companies. They invest the money in the fund, and you go, yeah, I know that company, I heard of that one, I know that one. They're all big billion-dollar companies. They've been around a long time. They always get a good return. If they have a bad year, it's probably because the whole marketplace is having a bad year. So if the tide goes out, the tide will come back up again. So they're fairly consistent, and they may return anywhere between 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, even up to 12% return over a period of time. Probably the average is around about 10% if you look at more a slightly higher risk fund. Higher risk means that, you know, it's a bit more flatulent with the marketplace. But if over time, if it keeps going up, it becomes the longer the investment, the lower the risk. The shorter the investment, the lower the higher the risk, because it may go down in the short term. But if you don't need it in the short term, you just wait for the tide to come back up again. There are other funds which are more low risk, and they put more things into cash investments and more secure investments, whatever it might be. And you may want to put them in there when you're more retired, where you want a bit of a dividend coming back to you. But if you don't need that dividend because you got your wage from your job or you got your profit from your business, then invest in places where you don't need the dividend and just keep it growing. And if you do get a dividend, you can have the option to invest that money back into to buy more units in the managed fund. So if you buy managed funds, you end up buying units that invest your money in shares. So they call it units. And again, have a good chat. Every bank will have a financial planner there for you, or a financial advisor. Go to your accountant. And also do your own research. I've made the mistake in the past where I've actually just relied too much on my financial planner, advisor, and accountant, and I've actually lost a fair bit of money through poor decisions. And I don't look, being fair, it wasn't entirely their decision. There were lots of reasons why they suggested that. I can see the reasons, but maybe if I did a bit more investigations and research, I may not have put as much money into those investments. So I've learned from my mistakes, and I'm passing that on to you today, which is the lesson. So in the plan A, your home, super, KiwiSaver, and maybe some managed funds. I just use them because they're easy, they're not hard. You can actually, the beautiful other thing with managed funds is you can liquidate them anytime. It means you can cash them in anytime. Just press a button, liquidate, boom, within a couple of days, the money's back in your account. You can't necessarily do that with a home because you actually have to sell it. But yeah, liquidity means that you can cash them in very, very quickly. Things such as real estate is not as liquid because you have to go through a process to sell it, and you may sell it, you may not sell it. With these ones, you can sell it instantly based on the share price. So make sure if you are going to sell that, don't sell in the low, sell in the high. Don't sell in the doom, sell in the boom if you can. So you may need to time your time that you're going to liquidate that. But remember, it's time in the marketplace, not timing in the marketplace, that determines your ultimate position at the end from a financial point of view. Because Yeah, it's not the timing, because it will always go up, yeah, because people always consume with consumption and construction. So things will always grow. They always have through the history of time, even from the Great Depression to the big 2000 millennium bug type thing going on there, to the GFC, you know, the global financial crisis. We've all recovered, you always move on. And we're going through a bit of a challenge in the world now, but this soon will also pass and we'll move on. And we'll go back to being what we do best as humans, is we like to make and create and construct and consume things. So that is plan A. Plan B, once you've got all that in place, then you know that the worst case scenario, by the time you retire, you own your own home, you may have your $2 million worth of investments, you're earning $100,000 a year, living a great life, you know, playing golf, doing some fishing, doing some knitting, bike riding, doing an overseas holiday once every 3 years, some local holidays, and living just a great cruisy life in the place you want to be. Okay, you may not have a private jet, you may not have you know, Italian marble driveway, but ultimately, as the great Warren Buffett says, you know, the greatest investor of all time, read his books, he's a very wise man. You know, ultimately, once you accumulate over $2 million, anything above that doesn't really make much difference to your happiness of lifestyle, because once you have that amount of financial freedom, whether you have a normal marble or Italian marble on a bench, with normal marbles $1,000, Italian marble $20,000, whether you have a $100 watch or a $100,000 watch, it still tells the time anyway. So anything beyond his suggestion is $2 million, which I can see why that would be the case. So that would give you $100,000 worth of wage. That would give you a lifestyle. You're not going to be limited. You're not going to be say, well, you can still travel. You may not be in business class or first class or private jet, but you're still traveling. So those financial restraints, that cage is actually opened up and you can do it. Well, how much style you do it in, that's completely up to you. If you want more style, then you may have to put in an investment plan that's going to give you 5 million, 10 million, 20 million at the end of the rainbow, not 2 million. But that depends on what life you want to live in the journey to that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So you can say, I'm going to work my backside off, get to the end of the rainbow, but along the way you compromise your health, you compromise your family, you compromise your lifestyle, and you get there and you're just a mess. I've met many very wealthy people who are miserable, they're unhappy, they're overweight, they're sick, they're diseased, they've gone through 3 divorces, they have kids to five different parents, and all. Yeah, my point being is that there's 2 things to consider: A, the end of the rainbow, but also what type of life you're going to live in the journey. So, you know, success is not a destination; it's a journey. It's a journey of magical experience, doing what you love, because they're the things that's going to create great memories on the way to that place at the end. Plan B is a bit more aggressive. You know, it's a little bit more aggressive. And not unsafe, but just a bit more aggressive. So now you're creating leverage to increase the speed of wealth generation or financial generation or asset generation. So this might be plan B, might be I'm going to buy a second home, an investment property, a third investment property, a fifth investment. So you now it's like the game of Monopoly, you know, the goal is to 3 houses, 4 houses, one red hotel. You know, how many greenhouses, get the money out, build, get the hotels. So life, that's like life in Monopoly. So plan B is to maybe generate more assets or golden gooses that lay golden eggs for you, where you work a bit harder, it's a bit more risky, it's a bit more tight financially, because you have to really extend financial resources to accumulate those assets. So that might be investment properties in real estate. In the managed funds area, it might be now going direct shares. You may think, well, I think I have a good clue of what I want to invest in. Rather than leaving it up to the fund manager, I'm going to go and research and do my own investing in buying shares direct. It means you're going to study and research the different companies, whether it be the technological companies, resources, whatever, and you think that you're a bit of a share guru type thing because you just watched Wall Street or something like that. And that's perfectly fine, but that's plan A. So even if those things don't work, where you get yourself into trouble and you're in a bit of financial, you still got A all set out. You still got the pot of gold. You're not negotiating or risking that ultimate pot of gold at the end. You're just getting some more pots of gold on top of it. So that's going to be plan B. B is second, third, fourth investment properties. Again, you have to do your research. You have to get some good people around you, use other people's minds, get a mastermind group around there to help you. You can study everything these days. You can go direct shares. You may start to leverage them, where you can actually get the resources where you borrow money to invest in shares and you pay the interest of the money, but the return on the shares pays for that. So there's lots of different ways to leverage that. And obviously in beers also building your own business, because that's more laboursome. It's 24/7. You're thinking about it, your ultimate responsibility, but you've got great opportunity to make a lot of money out of your own business, whether that's the business in the food business, the restaurant business, the fitness business, the banking business, the mortgage. One of my neighbors, he's just gone into business where he's a mortgage broker now, so he runs his own business, but he's up late at night. Before, and he was working for someone, sleeping at night. Now he owns the business, up late at night, working for someone, sleep at night, own his business, up late at night, but now he's making more money, but he's got more hassle. He works harder, he works longer, but he loves what he does, and that's setting himself and his family up with his young child up for greater financial opportunities in the future. He realized that. And he's a hard worker. Before, when he was working with someone, he was also driving an Uber. So he's not short of good work ethic. But now he can apply all that work ethic to his own business, to grow the business, to get a great wage, plus lots of profit, because that's where the money is. Profits is better than wages, as the great Jim Rohn, one of my favorite business philosophers, says. So building your own business, and then how big you grow that. You may build that to, a nice business turning over a couple hundred thousand, a couple mil, 20 mil, 200 mil, whatever it might be. And I know people who've started with a little business and now they have a business turning over 50, 60 million dollars a year, making profits of, 5, 10 million dollars of profit. Now, you can't earn that on a wage, but you can earn that growing your business, where you're growing the business where it makes great profit, you're leveraging it, whether it be leverage of technology online or leveraging it through multiple sites or leveraging it through lots of staff working for you. So you have other people working for you, other systems working for you, technology working for you to earn you money, and they get little pieces of the pie, but you get the profit of the pie. So business goes into plan B, what type of business, do what you're passionate about. Grow it to the level where it's going to be how you want to live your life, because you may not want the responsibility of having a massive business with hundreds of staff and lots of hassles, because the bigger the business, the bigger hassles. And that may take you away from, you probably want more hassles raising your kids or going on weekend excursions or bike rides or whatever it might be. It depends, again, what life you want to live. So that all fits into category B. So they're very sustainable, very much achievable. They're a bit more hassle. You've got to do more research, but they get greater return than A. And the last one is C. Now, what I put in C is everything else, which stuff which is, the barber gives you a tip, hey, these shares, they're just going to be released as an IPO, initial public offering, and if you can get in early, you're going to make the money. Or I heard about cryptocurrency, you should do that. Or, hey, you guess all this, how you should invest in this opportunity, or this person has this new bright idea. No one's ever done it. Warning, no one's ever done it. Means we don't know whether it's going to take off or not. So that's what I call the gambling area. So once you've got A in place, that's solid. And if you have the appetite, you want to go. You may just want A and just have a nice cruisy life. And you set yourself up for a great end. You may want to, hey, I want a bit of extra bells and whistles in my life, a bit more freedom. I want to do it a bit more style, so I need to generate more money, invest in more things that will give me a greater return. Yes, I'm happy with the hassle to manage those and deal with those as they grow. And then the C is these things which is I call gambling. Now, a lot of people, they want to make money fast, get rich quick schemes, and they go straight to C. And I've seen this happen. They get, and that's greed. They promise the world and deliver a flat atlas. If you're going to play a C, get A in place, get B in place, and there you're solid, and you're going to end up with this great pot of gold, great life at the end, while enjoying what you do. And then if you have any loose change over, any extra money, whatever, then throw it in C. And I've done that before. I've thrown money, and we've made some money, but we've lost a lot of money too. But if you lose it, it doesn't break you, because you've got A and B in place. So when you go invest in C, only invest in C investments that you're happy to lose. That if you lose it, you wouldn't make any difference. So A, your house, your KiwiSaver, your super, your blue chip managed funds, and a bit of cash. As I said, make sure you always have some cash in the back pocket in the bank for those emergency things, whether it be medical emergency or lifestyle emergency or whatever it might be. It means you see, whatever happens, I can get myself out of that hole. B is now the things which is your investment properties, your direct shares, maybe more aggressive managed funds. You may pick some managed funds who are a bit more aggressive, you know, biotechnology or stuff like that, where you don't know if they're going to work, they could, they can't. You're also direct shares and a business that you want to grow. And then C, the get rich quick schemes, the gambling, bit of fun. Okay, I'll show some money at it. Oh, I lost it. Oh, that was fun. There you go. It's like going down to the casino or going to the racetrack and putting money on things, or investing into someone else's business who has this great idea. So I'll throw a bit of money in there. You do all the work. If it works, it's going to give me a great return. If it doesn't, that's okay. It's not going to break my back because I've got A and B in play. So A, B, C. But don't go to sea to get rich. It will not end well. I've never come across people, and I'm actually working with people now who are asking for my help, and they've found themselves, they've dug themselves into this big hole, and they've got themselves into a lot of debt chasing, you know, that get rich quick scheme, yeah, and it doesn't work well. But if they had these two set up, then they'd just flush that guy. Who cares? Let it go. I'm not losing everything. I just lose that little 5-10% of my wealth at the end. It doesn't make the difference, but hey, if it goes well, it could double it. So A, B, C. So again, I would share the most important thing: don't let money dominate your life. Create a life the way you want to live a life, and work out what you need to put into place to live and enjoy that life. Because ultimately, you know, you don't. You know, you don't work for life. You want to live a life while you're working, doing what you love, to generate enough money to serve your life, serve your purpose, serve your family, serve your hobbies, serve your recreation, serve your travel. Money is just a number. That's all it is. It's like oxygen. Excess oxygen is not going to make you live any better. You just need enough oxygen to live the life you want to live. If you want more oxygen to be fitter, get fitter, build up your body's ability to use oxygen, to have greater capacity to experience life, and be climbing mountains or running through the fields of life. And you know, the amount of money you need is the amount of money that you need to pay for the price tags, the things and the opportunities and the moments and the memories that you want to create in your life. So don't make decisions based on money. Create a life, or what life you want to live, and then work out who do you have to become and how valuable you have to become, and what you need to learn and what skill you need to develop to live that life. And if you develop your skills, you develop your knowledge, you're going to be able to create enough money to live a fantastic life of freedom, where you can do what you want, when you want, with whom you want, for as long as you want. See you in the next K-Max.